Hey everyone, welcome back to the Women Blazers podcast. I'm your host, Deanna Witter. I'm excited to have Brooke Faugh as our featured guest for this episode. Brooke serves as the Vice President of Client Experiences for Bespoke Sports and Entertainment, a consulting and experiential marketing agency that assists brands in selecting the right partnerships and maximizing their sponsorship investment. Brooke shares her unique and incredible journey with us all, which began in education as a kindergarten teacher and high school basketball coach. Through the power of connection and the spark of her passion for sports, she met some incredible supporters along her path that introduced her to new opportunities, remarkable people, and life-changing experiences that made her the leader she is today. I want to take a moment to present a heartfelt thanks to our sponsor, Entello Sports Partners, for supporting Women Blazers all season long. Entello Sports Partners is a talent search firm in sports and entertainment with a distinct mission of championing women leaders in sports. We appreciate Entello Sports' focus on advancing gender equity in our industry.
I've been so blessed with opportunities because we were a startup and we were scrappy, and I was able to be in rooms that, quite frankly, I had no business being in, but they didn't have anybody else. So like, I'm in the room, and I'm just so, so grateful for Mike and Greg, who are the president and CEO of Bespoke. They were allies before the word ally was even a buzzword. And I didn't have any women to look up to, but they always made sure that my voice was heard. They always made sure that I felt included. And I grew into the strong female leader that I am because of the two of them.
All right, Brooke, you graduated with a Bachelor of Science degree in elementary and special education from Ball State University. Now share with us the origin and vision for the career you had pursued while in college.
Yeah, so education was not my first vision. I actually started college as a telecommunications major. I loved sports. I loved to talk, put them together. I wanted to be the next like ESPN broadcaster. And then I got into that and was dating a guy at the time who didn't love the idea of me being on the road as much as sports broadcasters have to be on the road. Yeah. And so I switched my major to education, mainly because I played basketball my whole life. And when I couldn't play anymore because of bad knees, I started coaching. And in order to be a varsity basketball coach in the state of Indiana, which is where I was from, you had to have your teacher's license. So really, teaching and my education major came from that. But I'm really grateful that I took kind of the non-traditional path, because I feel like if you've ever met a teacher, teachers can do anything and they have a bazillion transferable skills. I always tell people, like, you need a leader. Try getting 25 5-year-olds to sit down and listen to you. Right. If you could do that, you can be a leader, you know? So I'm grateful for my education background because it's really helped me kind of get where I am today.
No, that's incredible. And, you know, to your point, like, you had one vision, you switched vision, inspired by a boyfriend. Was that a good idea or a bad idea? You said it was
a terrible idea. You should never, ever, ever listen to anyone but yourself. That's regardless, boyfriend, girlfriend, parents, grandparents, like, you know what's the best path for you. And so I tell people, I took like a 10-year, you know, kind of detour to where I am now. Yeah. And really, had I listened to myself, I probably would have ended up here anyway, but I enjoyed the journey.
No, it's all part of your story, you know, and I think that's awesome. And I appreciate that. And it's clear that obviously your education background, to your point, had very many transferable skills that led you on the path you are on today. And while at Ball State, you decided to actually continue your education by getting your master's in administration and supervision. So what inspired you to continue your education, obtain your master's, instead of sort of jumping into the career path?
Yeah. So I was teaching at the time and then doing like night school at night. So again, teachers are superheroes. And just wanted to do, I knew that I wanted a master's and I knew I wanted to be a leader of some sort. And so while this was a master's in administration in education, it really taught me leadership skills. Again, if you can lead a school, you can lead a company. And so I was just really grateful for that continuing education that really kind of brought out kind of my strong suit, which are my leadership skills.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And then, you know, after you graduate with this master's degree, you know, how did you navigate the launch of your career after Ball State?
Yeah, so it's interesting. People have always told me it doesn't necessarily matter what you have a degree in as long as you have a degree. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that that was not true, you know, like, oh no, it matters. No, it really doesn't. And so I was able to, my first job outside of teaching was in community relations. I was the director of the Earth Fair Foundation, which Earth Fair is a natural grocery store, kind of like a Whole Foods.
Okay.
So I did community relations for them and actually led their foundation. And, you know, it was funny when I was in the interview process, I was like, y'all know I'm a kindergarten teacher, right? And they were like, yes, but, you know, like you have this degree, you have this master's, like you check all of the boxes. And then, so we wanted to, you had to check the boxes in order to get the interview. And then in the interview is really then when your personality is able to shine. Yeah. So I was grateful for the box checks. But I do think that, you know, that you've got to have more than just the degrees, right? You've got to have the experience and the personality and all of the things. But as someone once told me, it doesn't matter what it's in, but if you've got the paper, it gets you in the door in a lot of places.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, the investment you make in your education obviously pays off, and they're always necessary for you to start an opportunity as well. And tell us a little bit more maybe about this community relations opportunity with the grocery store. What did you learn and take away from that experience?
Yeah, so it was so interesting. I was sitting at a bar having dinner by myself, which makes me sound really sad, but you know, and I struck up this conversation with this gentleman next to me. And anyway, by the end of now our dinner together, he was like, hey, I'm opening this natural grocery store in the area. The demo that I'm trying to reach is young moms, you know, with kids who care about nutrition and things that their families are putting in their bodies. And it sounds like you are really in this community and you kind of know where all of these people hang out at. Like, would you like a job? And I was like, you know what? Yeah. And so teaches you always, you know, your parents always tell you, like, never talk to strangers. No, I'm like, talk to them all day long. When you're sitting in a bar by yourself, like, you never know, it might lead to a job opportunity. But yeah, so we started, we opened up an Earth Fair here. I now live in Charlotte, North Carolina, about north of the city in an area called Lake Norman. Mm-hmm. And it's just this beautiful, amazing place to raise a family. So there's a ton of young families that live here. And so we did every 5K, yoga-thon, Girl Scout troop, Boy Scout troop, like anything that was going on in the community, I showed up, and I showed up with free food. So needless to say, I was a big hit. And just kind of tried to teach kids about, you know, like healthy snacking, about how to get their bodies moving and stay energetic, and just really trying to kind of handle what is becoming a major problem in our country, which is childhood obesity. So just trying to combat that a little bit with teaching kids how to move their bodies and how they can have snacks. There's just, you know, better choices than others. And so just teaching them how to make those better choices.
Yeah, it sounds like just an incredible opportunity. And I love how you got the job, you know, sitting at a bar, having a conversation with somebody. You know, in the last episode, one of the things we talked about, it's like you're always interviewing, even when you don't realize you're interviewing. You know, you just never know who you're going to talk to or run into in any situation. And so it's really cool that an opportunity sparks from that, that engagement you had and eating by yourself, which is never a bad thing. Sounds relaxing, actually.
Yeah.
Now, in October 2013, you joined Novant Health as their sports partnerships manager and managed the organization's partnerships with the Charlotte Hornets, the Charlotte Checkers, and several NASCAR properties. So how did you land this opportunity? And what were some of those key takeaways of that first experience in sports?
I feel like I have a story for everything, but like, welcome to my life. So I was at Earth Fair and really, really loved my job. And then that role moved to Asheville, North Carolina, which is about 2 hours away. And I had just had my son. He was an infant. And so I was not moving to Asheville. And so I thought I was going to just be a stay-at-home mom. And the only people that work harder than teachers are stay-at-home moms. It's the hardest job in the world. And so I said, okay, forget this. This is not for me. And so I decided to go to a networking breakfast. It was a sports networking breakfast because I made the decision, you know, I wanted to work in sports many moons ago. And now that I'm kind of redoing my career journey, why don't we try the sports thing again? And so I went to this networking event and I met a gentleman by the name of Mike Boykin. And the name might sound familiar because, funny enough, he is now my boss and CEO of Bespoke, which is the agency that I work at. But at the time, he just was a really great person who was running a networking event for folks trying to get a job in sports in Charlotte. And so I met him and met kind of like the sports inner circle in Charlotte. And through that circle, heard about an opening that was at Novant Health. And so I interviewed for that job. And I had a really good friend who was a NASCAR driver who I had helped run a charity event for. And he had a relationship with them. And so he put in a word for me. And, you know, next thing I knew, I was getting the job. And so I think, you know, people always ask me, like, what advice I have. And I think right there, the fact that I had volunteered for this driver and helped him put on his foundation event, you know, 2 years later, he's then helping me land a job. So it's always best to help others, because then when you need something, it's kind of easier to make that ask because you've already, you know, put forth the effort and they know that you're authentic. So I was super grateful for him, you know, in one, allowing me to help be such a big responsibility of his great event. And then two, when I needed him, then he totally came through and I was lucky enough to get the job at Nova.
That's awesome. That sounds like an incredible opportunity and experience as well. And to your point, like, it's best to help others. I mean, when you are authentic and you show your kindness and you help others, you know, that investment in good, I think, always comes back. It, you know, always pays off.
So true.
Maybe is the best way to say that. But it's incredible. Are you guys still friends today? You still stay connected?
So, okay. So here's like the longest story ever, short version. Oh my gosh. And I think I answer like three more of your questions. So here we go. Okay. So I was working at Novant, loving my job, loving my coworkers. I ran sports partnerships for them. And it was when the NBA team in Charlotte was the Charlotte Bobcats.
That's right.
Yep. I don't even remember that. but they were switching to be the Charlotte Hornets. And Michael Jordan was our owner. And so I got to work with MJ. I got to work with guys like Del Curry and Muggsy Bogues because they were bringing back like the old school Hornets. And it was just, as a girl from Indiana who loved basketball,
yes,
it was an absolute dream. So part of my job at Novant was I had what was called the bat phone. And anytime that a celebrity of sort would come to the hospital, they would call me and let me know. And it was my job to come in with them, basically to just make sure like confidentiality was kept. They weren't asked for or given blood, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so one day the bat phone rings and I come in and tell you who it is. You know, so I come in and there sits the NASCAR driver that helped me get Bob and his longtime girlfriend. And I knew them both very well, obviously, and had been doing their foundation event every year. And so I looked at him and I was like, oh my gosh, what happened? And he pointed to her. And just being diagnosed with stage 3C ovarian cancer.
Oh no.
She had to go into immediate surgery. We weren't sure she was going to live or die. And so I sat with them for like 10 hours while she was in that surgery. She thankfully came out of surgery, fought like hell, and she beat ovarian cancer. She actually beat it twice.
Oh, wow.
So we obviously became very, very close after that. At the same time, I was like, man, I really want to do something bigger in sports. Yeah. And I just want to, I want to make something of myself here. And so the agency that I had hired at Novant to help me was the agency that Mike was working at the time, who was the guy at from the networking group.
Right.
Well, they call me one day and they're like, hey, Mike is no longer with us. I just wanted to let you know. And I'm like, well, what the heck? So I call him and I'm like, excuse me, where do you think you're going? You like, I just hired this agency because of you. You can't leave. And he's like, hey, come have a beer with me. I'm like, okay. So I go have a beer with him and his business partner, and they kind of paint the picture of Bespoke and what it stands for and why it's different and why it fills a gap in the agency world that's so needed. And I thought they were pitching me bring my business over. Mm. And they were like, yeah, that actually we'd really like for you to leave your job and help us start this agency. And my son wasn't even two at the time. He was barely one. And I was like, y'all have your mind. There's no way that I'm leaving this great job. No, no, no. And so I'd actually talked to Sherry, the girl who survived the ovarian cancer. Yeah. She was a really good friend. And so I talked to her. She was like, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. You have to take it. So I crazy enough, left my job, went to this startup agency. And one of the first clients that we was this healthcare system that was based in Florida that really believed in integrative wellness, which means like mind, body, spirit, soul. Like it takes everything to make yourself and make yourself well, which is exactly what Sherry believed in. And so I introduced the two of them. We did some really great content around like all the lifestyle changes that she's made and is making while on the road, because the NASCAR season is a grueling season. We race from Valentine's Day to Thanksgiving. And so she really had to be able to live this lifestyle on the road pretty much the whole year round. So anyway, the content took off. And we decided that we wanted to build an integrative wellness clinic in her honor in Florida, next to where this hospital is headquartered. And so I went to them and I said, hey, they want to build this hospital in your honor. You know, we're going to raise like $3 million in order to build it. And they were like, absolutely, we're in. And so we took the event that I had planned for all these years and volunteered at and all of the things, right? So again, coming full circle.
Yes.
And we moved it to Daytona. And the night before 500, which is basically like the Super Bowl in the NASCAR world, right. We threw the event and raised a ton of money. And then we've done other events to subsequently raise even more money to where we're going to actually open the integrative hospital around next year's Daytona 500 and do like a ribbon cutting and all of that. And I wish that this story had a better ending, but it actually gets even crazier. So Sherry had another battle. So she was battling ovarian cancer again. We sat down one day to plan this event, and I swear she just looked at me and she was like, hey, something's not right. I just feel it like in you. Here's the name of my doctor. It's an integrative doctor. They can run tests that like normally don't get run. Do me a favor. Just make me feel better. Go. I was like, I rolled my eyes, you know, but okay, fine. I'll go. No kidding. Stage one endometrial cancer in me. And they found it in stage one. I was able to remove it quickly. Did a little bit of extra medication, but I'm completely fine now. Unfortunately lost her battle in September. So actually she won't be there to open the integrative clinic with us, but her spirit will very much be there. And I say all of this to say, like, I met them when I was a kindergarten teacher in Mooresville, North Carolina. I'd moved to North Carolina and I'd met them. One of their friends was their kid was in my class. So he was a parent, and that's how I got introduced. And then helped them do this event, which then led me to my job at Novant, kept doing the event. Then I moved to the agency. The agency does the event. And had we not been planning that event, I wouldn't have had lunch with her that day. She wouldn't have said what she said. And I would have been in the same boat, because this is a very quiet disease until it's not. Unfortunately, she didn't catch it in time, but very fortunately, I did. So there's the crazy story.
Yeah, I mean, that's It's a crazy story, but it's also a beautiful story, you know, yeah. and how you talk about just a connection and the power of connection with people and
so right.
and what it brought you in this journey. It's such a big part of it, you know, and
it's so true.
Yeah. And where you are today, and I'm happy to hear that you are healthy and you're good, and I hope you continue to be healthy and safe in that space. And obviously, you know, the legacy, you know, that yeah. will be left with the opening. You said this September.
So it'll be in February around the Daytona 500. And I think that's like the most powerful thing that I've learned about working in sports is we have such a voice and such a platform because people listen, like rightly or wrongly, listen to quote unquote famous people. Right. And so I've just been really grateful to be surrounded by people of influence that happen to be in the sports and entertainment world, but that use their voice for powerful reasons and for life reasons. And that's one of the biggest blessings of working in the sports and entertainment world.
Yeah, it truly is. And I think, you know, often everybody just thinks, oh, it's just a sport. You know, you hear a lot of like shut up and dribble stuff, you know, you're like, you know, it's like, well, the platform is so impactful and it connects with so many people from all different walks of life all around the world. And I don't know if there's anything more powerful than a platform that makes people feel.
So true.
You know, and so if you have that platform and you're using it for good, I mean, that's what's so remarkable. And it's true. It's one of the things that motivates me every day to wake up because I know the opportunity I have through this work and all the lives that I hope that, you know, are positively impacted by the work that we do every day across all of our respective agencies and sports teams and leagues that, you know, just it's sort of remarkable to remind yourself every day that you're part of that. Today, you still, to your point, you still work for Bespoke Sports and Entertainment. You've been there now 10 years or almost 10 years. You serve as the vice president of client experiences. And so one of the things I'd love to further touch on is just your growth. You know, it's obviously clear that you've actually gained a lot of personal growth from the experiences you've had throughout your career, and especially over the last almost 10 years with Bespoke, from a professional growth perspective. Sort of what's been your approach to professional growth and growing from sort of that manager that you came in as to now the VP you are today?
Yeah, I'm so grateful for my time at Bespoke because it's truly made me who I am today. So when we started, it was the three of us. And so it's so funny. Like, I don't even think I had a title when we started. It was just like, get it done, whatever it takes, you know? And I still remember the first day, like we got a printer and we hooked it all up and we were like, okay, let's see if this works. And then I looked at the guys and I was like, okay, where's the paper? And they looked at me and they're like, wait, this thing doesn't come with paper. And I'm like, oh my God, hold on. So we had to go to the office supply store, get paper, you know, and it was like, okay. And we started with literally zero clients. And so the first thing that I learned was just the hustle of, you know, the relationship process and the sales process and how to get people to like and trust you and turn their business. And so I think that's probably the biggest lesson that I learned in all of it. But then, you know, I really gravitated towards the client experience, hospitality side of things. I just really love seeing people take in sporting events for the first time, or it might not even be the first time, but just take it in and feel special and be like, oh my gosh, I get to do this. And I love being the one that brings that opportunity to them. Yeah. And so I think very early on, you know, Mike and Greg both realized that was a world I was really good at. And so as we started getting more and more clients in that space, I was just lucky enough to grow. And first it was hiring one person, then it was hiring two, and now I have a whole team. And I'm so very proud of them. They are all female, not on purpose, but just, you know, just happened that way. But they are just these dynamic rock stars who, quite frankly, are running the accounts now and really just coming to me for like advice and guidance so that then I can still go out and be, you know, one of the faces at the agency and go do new business and go do all the things that on an executive level I need to do on a daily basis. Yeah. I would not be able to do that without the support and my team being as good and as solid as they are. But yeah, I grew super quick because the agency grew super quick. And we're getting ready to turn 10. And that is just so mind-blowing to me that I've spent a decade. This is basically like I have a baby who's 11 and this is my second baby and it's turning 10. So but I've been so blessed with opportunities because we were a startup and we were scrappy and I was able to be in rooms that quite frankly I had no business being in, but they didn't have anybody else. So like I'm in the room and I'm just so, so grateful for Mike and Greg, who are the president and CEO of Bespoke. They were allies before the word ally was even a buzzword. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any women to look up to, but they always made sure that my voice was heard. They always made sure that I felt included. And I grew into the strong female leader that I am because of the two of them.
That's incredible. And it speaks so highly of the culture and the organization, obviously their leadership, as well as, you know, your growth personally, and just like taking mm-hmm. the opportunity to be in rooms, like you said, that you knew maybe at the time you weren't supposed to be in, but there was no one else and you had to step up and step into that seat or, and that opportunity. And that's, I think sometimes the greatest opportunity of growth is when you just step into a situation, even if you don't feel that readiness yet, because that's where growth happens in those maybe challenging or uncomfortable situations too. Every episode, I always like to hit on sort of these key topics and I go back to like, you know, themes, let's say, through previous conversations. And one I have not spoke about, and I'm excited to sort of launch this season with you, is work ethic. So when I was doing my research for this episode, it was clear that your unyielding work ethic has been a significant contributor to you, to where you are today. And so I'm just curious, you know, what is your personal philosophy when it comes to work ethic? And your work ethic specifically, and what advice would you give our listeners about how to demonstrate a strong work ethic?
Oh man, that's such a great question. And I think it's such a topic right now as so I'm technically a millennial. I'm an elder millennial, but I'm a millennial. But you know, millennials get a bad rap about, you know, not having work ethic and all of the things. And I take serious offense to that. but then as I look at the generation behind me and raising them, they're just built differently. And so I, like I said, I was able to hire my team, and I'm very specific in who I hire, because you can't be the, like, I clock in at 9, I clock out at 5. I don't answer emails on the weekends. Like, that just doesn't work in this world. And if you know, work-life balance, I'm all for it, but there's ways to manage it to where you still get everything done. And so on the topic of work ethic, I was raised in the country in Indiana. I was raised that if you wanted something, you had to go get it. I wasn't given anything. Mm-hmm. I had a very great life, but my parents made sure that I knew that, you know, they had a great life. And if I wanted a great life, I needed to provide it for myself. and so I also think, you know, going back to being a teacher, like, you just understand that, like, what you do makes such a difference in this world, right? And so now that I'm not teaching anymore, I still take that philosophy out there. And so I always tell people, like, do as I say, not as I do, because I am the worst when it comes to, like, turning it off. I don't turn it off. But I also think that that's what makes me so great. And great in what I do, and great in the, like, people know that at 2 a.m. if they need something and it's important, like, I got you, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I think especially when I was young, like, now that I'm older, I've put in the work and I've made the relationships, and I can maybe take a backseat a little bit and let someone younger, go and do that. Or it's my job to now teach them how to be that. But when I was young, man, every opportunity, every volunteer chance I had, I worked like, okay, let's be honest, teachers make no money. So I worked like four jobs, right? I was a teacher, then I hosted trivia at my local bar, and then I was a basketball coach, and then I like did like another side hustle. Like I just did anything and everything that I could. One, to meet as many people as I could, and then two, just to make a life for myself. And yeah. So I am very, very grateful for the work ethic my parents instilled in me. And I am now trying to turn that into my 11-year-old and trying to teach him how to go be just a good citizen in this world and like go contribute to something. I think, you know, doing everything you can, especially when you're young, is the biggest advice I have, because as you get older, your personal responsibilities step up. You know, you get married, you have families, you have elder parents that you've got to now take care of. Like, life never gets any easier. So when you're young, that's the time to like do as much as you can.
Yeah. No, and I would agree. I think that's some really great advice. And, you know, I think when you're starting, you know, out in your career, the way to really differentiate yourself, right, from everybody else is being accessible to do extra work, you know, and how much time you put into the work that you did for it to be excellent, your version of excellence, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's what separates maybe the people who get opportunities younger than people who are still waiting for their opportunity, you know. It's like, how much,
so true,
how bad did you want it, how much were you willing to work at it, are you willing to stay past five, are you willing to take the call at two, as you explained, like and it's the people that can rely on you. And I think that's the other side of it. It's your hard work ethic then defines how reliable you are to somebody, and your reliability equals your value, which I think ultimately results in your opportunities. There's some formula there. I'm just like, I'm spinning it together right now, but that there's something there for sure.
So true. Mm.
And you mentioned work-life balance, which is the next topic. You know, we talk every episode and since season one, episode one, I've talked about lifestyle, you know, as women, especially as mothers, you know, we get a lot of questions about work-life balance and this idea that we're supposed to balance our work and our personal lives. But in fact, one thing that we've done in this podcast is sort of thrown that idea and concept out and talked really about lifestyle. Like, we each of us have structured our lifestyles so it works for the things that matter to us: our work, our commitments, our family, our personal time, whatever it might be, our health. You know, those are the things that we consider our personal lifestyles. And so I'm curious for you, you know, how do you structure or manage your lifestyle so that works for you and everything that brings you joy in your life, including your family?
Yeah. So every time I'm asked to speak, I always get this question, and I laugh. I'm like, do you guys ask the men this question? And, you know, and everyone's like, oh, no, but I always say that, balance is bull crap, because if you're truly balanced, you're half and half, you're 50%, right? You're 50% on one side and 50% on the other. And I don't know about you, but I don't do anything at 50%.
No, definitely not.
And so, yeah. And so I instead have gotten really laser focused on being 100 and honestly, usually over 100 in pockets of time, right? So like right now I'm speaking to you and you have 100% of my undivided attention. I'm not answering emails. I turned my phone on do not disturb. My son is at school. Like I'm giving you this as my 100%. You know, here pretty soon I have to pick up my son from school. When he's in the car with me, he has my 100%. And I'm, you know, handling, like, we're talking about the school day, we're talking about this, we're talking about that. I then go drop him off at soccer practice and I get about an hour and a half window where I can give work 100%, or I can call a friend, or I can do whatever I need to do. So it's not even like, sometimes it's even down to like 10 minutes of I'm giving you 100% for 10 minutes and then I'm turning my attention over here for 10 minutes. But I was driving myself crazy trying to quote unquote balance everything.
Yeah.
And once I threw the word balance out the window and just said, what am I giving my undivided attention to right now? Because when you were balancing things, when I was balancing things, no one felt loved. No one felt like they were paid attention to because I was constantly juggling multiple people or multiple tasks. And no one was like, hey, I have all of you right now. Like no one. And that's a terrible feeling. It's a terrible feeling as an employee. It's a terrible feeling as a boss. It's a terrible feeling as a mother. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of just had this like come to Jesus talk with myself of like, I have got to make people feel important and feel like they're an integral part of my life. And so I really have got to start focusing. And once I switch to who gets my undivided attention right now, that's when honestly, my schedule just got so much better because I can literally schedule out and know like, okay, for this chunk of time, I'm work Brooke for this chunk of time. I'm mom Brooke for this chunk of time. I'm friend Brooke, you know, like whatever Brooke you need me to be, I can schedule it out. But then when I'm friend Brooke, I'm truly friend Brooke. And I'm not also work Brooke and mom Brooke and all of the things too, to where my friends feel left out. And same for everything else in my life.
Yeah. That's incredible. Thank you for that. And I think how you articulated like giving somebody your 100. Like, I feel like that could mm-hmm. be like its own bumper sticker. Like, right? Like, you know, those little stickers that he has like yeah. on your laptop, like you have my 100. And I think that just, mm-hmm. and thinking it and saying it to somebody makes them, to your point, feel like they have your full attention because they do, because you just gave it to them. And that's the mm-hmm. gift we keep giving to the people in our lives, right? It's your time, it's your attention, it's your listening, it's everything that goes into it. And I like how you structured that. It's something I hadn't heard before in that way of sort of this doses of 100 that you're able to give throughout the day. And imagine how much impact you have when you aren't balancing, but literally giving out hundreds. You know?
Yeah. The other thing, and actually Sherry taught me this, she would literally lay out 10 spoons, like, you know, like what you eat cereal with, yeah. 10 of them, like laid them out in front of me. And she would say that everything that you expend energy on is a spoon. So like you want to do a yoga class, that's a spoon. You need to have an hour long meeting, you know, at work, that's a spoon. You need to like whatever. And so, but you only get 10 of them a day.
Yeah.
And so when I would get worked up about something, she would say to me, is this worth a spoon? And I'm like, Nope. It sure isn't, you know, like, and so it just really made me refocus on what am I truly expending my energy on? Because I only get 10 spoons a day and I'm darn sure not going to waste a spoon on something that isn't worth it.
Right. Where the dose isn't worth the spoon. I mm-hmm. love that. That's fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing that. And then finally, I always love to end on just a bit of advice. You know, what advice would you love to leave our listeners as they look to achieve their personal and professional goals in this industry?
Yeah, I think, gosh, if you've made it this far and haven't turned it off, you realize that my path is not the straight and narrow. I do not have the typical path, and that's okay. And so I think, you know, when kids are in high school, you know, the first question they're asked is like, what college are you going to? And then what's your major? And then what do you want to be when you grow up? And it's okay to not know. And it's okay at 19 to think you want to be a sports broadcaster. And then at 20 to think you want to be a teacher. And then at 26 to think you want to work in sports marketing. And then at 28, you want to start an agency. Like all of that is okay. And I feel like we put so much pressure on ourselves, but on our, like, Americans are really the worst at it of like, we got to figure out our life and we got to figure out our life right now. And like, life is meant to be lived. And so go try it. If you don't like it, try something else. And as long as you're a good human and you contribute to something bigger than yourself, if you can say that you're those two things, then like whatever you're doing in the world is working, you know, and just keep doing it until you find something that you do love. And then once you find something that you do love, and more importantly, once you find people that you love to be with and work with, like hold on to them and hold on to that as tough, like as hard as you can. There've been so many people throughout my my journey at Bespoke who've reached out and, you know, they've tried to recruit me to other things. They've tried to pay me more money. They've tried to give me better work-life balance, you know, which I tell them isn't really a thing. But what they cannot offer me is better people. Like, I just literally work with the best. And so, and I just tell them that, like, there's one thing you don't have, and it's the people that I work with. And that is worth more than any salary you could offer me, any balance you could give me, any days off. Like, and so find your tribe and then stick with them. That's the biggest piece of advice that I have.
Oh, that's wonderful advice. Thank you so much, Brooke, for sharing your career journey, your insights, that incredible advice with us today. And thank you so much for being a guest on Women Blazers.
Thanks for having me.
And that's a wrap on episode 82 for the Women Blazers podcast. Thank you to Brooke for sharing her journey and insights with all of us today. And as a gesture of gratitude, Intello Sports Partners will gift Brooke a one-year membership for her to join the Pro Sports Assembly, an organization dedicated to promoting equity in pro sports. I encourage you to visit prosportsassembly.org for details on joining this impactful organization. I also want to thank Intello Sports for their incredible support and for their faith in our podcast's mission. Now, to stay connected and to engage with the Women Blazers community, follow us on Instagram at Women Blazers. And also mark your calendars for our next episode dropping Monday, April 29th. Until next time, I hope you have a wonderful week.